I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's January 9th, and we have a lot to talk about. One of the things that impacts almost everyone living with MS, and therefore requires that we talk about it, is the cost of MS disease-modifying therapies. If you remember your Economics 101 class, in a free market, the introduction of generic and biosimilar drugs should cause prices to drop. Yet, that doesn't always happen. And we also hear stories about pharmacies switching people from the brand-name drug that their neurologist prescribed to a generic without notifying the patient or their doctor. In the upside-down logic that seems to drive the price of prescription medications, generics can create insurance issues, and they can even have a negative impact on the patient assistance programs that pharmaceutical companies offer. So joining me to help you navigate the sometimes tangled web of the cost of generic, biosimilar, and other prescription medications is Robin LaRue. Robin is one of the National MS Society's MS Navigators, and Robin specializes in health insurance resources. But before we get to my conversation with Robin LaRue, there are a few other things that you should know about. I know that a lot of you have a keen interest in how diet may impact MS. While experts often remind us that there is no so-called MS diet, some specific diets that are recommended to people living with MS tend to restrict gluten and/or dairy products. Well, now there's evidence that this may not be a helpful strategy at all. A research team in Australia conducted a study involving 189 people with MS and found no association between dairy or gluten consumption and MS disease activity. The study showed that over a two-year period, people who consumed dairy and/or gluten were as likely to show no evidence of disease activity, often referred to as NEDA 3, as people who didn't consume dairy and/or gluten. So first, let's define what NEDA 3 is. NEDA, that is N-E-D-A, is an acronym for No Evidence of Disease Activity. Specifically, no relapses, no new or enlarging lesions, and no disability progression. In this study, all the participants completed screeners that assessed their dairy and gluten intake for the previous 2 years, including the quantity of these foods and the frequency that they were consumed at each meal. The research team then used statistical models to compare the intake of dairy and gluten among study participants who had not experienced disease activity with study participants who had experienced disease activity over the same 2 years. And individual measures of relapse rates, disability progression, MRI activity, and quality of life showed no significant differences between the two groups of study participants. Interestingly, among the study participants who had achieved NEDA 3, consumption of dairy products was 21% higher, and consumption of products containing gluten was 7% less compared to the study participants who had experienced disease activity over the two-year period. And although this was a relatively small study, the research team concluded, and I'm quoting from their report now, "Detection of more modest effects will require larger sample sizes. However, it remains to be determined whether such effects will translate to clinically important differences in disease activity. Therefore, recommending a healthy, balanced diet for MS may be the best approach." End quote. If you'd like to review the details of this study as you're enjoying a glass of low-fat milk or your favorite cheese with a few crackers, you'll find a link in today's show notes. Fatigue is one of the most common symptoms of MS. It's estimated that 80% of the people living with MS experience fatigue, And fatigue is one of those symptoms that just seems to get in the way and keep you from fully engaging in life. When we think of symptom management, we often think of taking yet one more medication. But results from two different studies may demonstrate that non-pharmaceutical interventions could be helpful in managing MS-related fatigue. The first study I want to share with you focused on testing an SMS-based intervention. In other words, texting. A research team had developed an SMS-based fatigue intervention for people living with MS and other neurological conditions. And this study was designed to assess the acceptability and feasibility of this text-based intervention over a 12-week period. The researchers also looked at whether the study participants engaged with the texts they received and whether they experienced any benefits as a result. The intervention consisted of four educational text messages sent Monday through Thursday morning each week. These messages provided tips to manage fatigue, as well as information about assistive technology, simplifying activities, diet and hydration, effective communication, managing your physical activity, and sleep. The study participants also received two weekly check-in text messages every Friday, asking them about their fatigue level over the previous week, and whether they had applied any of the tips from that week's text messages. Now, the pilot study included 27 people with disabilities. 9 had MS, 9 had spinal cord injury, and 9 were recovering from a stroke. All of the study participants indicated that fatigue was impacting their daily lives. Before and after the intervention, the study participants completed a number of different health assessments, and a satisfaction questionnaire was distributed after the intervention. 93% of the study participants completed the full study, and the participants with MS had the highest response rate, 96.8%, suggesting high acceptability and adherence. 92% of the study participants reported being very or mostly satisfied with the intervention, and 92% of the participants indicated they would recommend this intervention to a friend. The intervention itself had a moderate effect on two measures of fatigue, and it also improved the quality of sleep and the study participants' satisfaction with participating in social activities. Now, perhaps it was the content and quality of the text messages, or it may have been as simple as engaging a group of people who often experience a kind of isolation that serves as a ready canvas to ruminate on your symptoms and other negative aspects of life. But for whatever reason, texting regularly with some built-in accountability seems to show promise as a means of better managing how fatigue may impact your daily life. Just as a reminder, this was a small study, but the outcome will hopefully lead to future studies with a larger number of participants. And if you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. While we're talking about non-pharmaceutical interventions for MS-related fatigue, a larger study involving 126 people with MS-related fatigue demonstrated that a 20-week talk therapy program based on cognitive behavioral therapy led to significant reductions in MS-related fatigue. Other research has shown that cognitive behavioral therapy, or CBT, eases MS-related fatigue, but that benefit tended to be short-lived. In this clinical trial, the participants completed a 20-week CBT course, and then they were followed for 1 year. After the CBT program, about half of the study participants didn't receive any further talk therapy. The other half received two video consultations with a therapist, along with online modules designed to practice the concepts that they learned in the 20-week program. The results of the trial showed that fatigue scores lessened considerably for both groups over the course of the 20-week CBT program, and then those fatigue scores remained low regardless of whether the study participants received the follow-up talk therapy or not. A previous study that focused on the impact of CBT on fatigue showed improvement, but as I mentioned, the benefits didn't seem to last. That study provided 12 CBT sessions over 12 weeks. This study spread the CBT sessions over 20 weeks, and that difference in duration may be responsible for the positive outcome of this study. The research team indicated that they'd like to see this same study conducted with a follow-up period of more than 1 year to better qualify the long-term benefits of the program. If you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find that link in today's show notes. Carrying on with the non-pharmaceutical theme that seems to have developed this week, recently published results from a small pilot study contain potentially good news for people who are caring for someone living with MS. In this study, remote coaching sessions were combined with online information to support the mental health and emotional well-being of MS caregivers. The coaching sessions focused on information, support, and strategies for caring and planning for the future, while a website provided caregivers with information about MS and strategies for caring for their care recipients as well as themselves. 151 study participants were recruited for this study, and the participants were divided into two groups. One group received 4 personalized coaching sessions by 2 social workers, either by video conference or by telephone. They also had access to the website that I just described. The other group of study participants only received access to that website. And perhaps not too surprisingly, the caregivers who received coaching sessions that identified their individual needs and then provided practical suggestions for caring for someone with MS showed significant improvement immediately after the intervention and at a 6-week follow-up. The combined intervention also significantly lowered stress levels, which was not the case among the study participants who were only given access to that website. MS caregivers also reported to the research team that they were frustrated with the lack of reliable information on managing patient care and being able to find support for their own emotional and physical needs. So I'll take this opportunity to share that a new online resource will be launching shortly that speaks directly to this frustration with what I think is a strong solution. You'll hear more about that later. As someone who spent a couple of decades caring for someone living with MS, I can attest to the frustration expressed by the caregivers who were part of this pilot study. And I can also attest to the lack of reliable resources available today. So it's reassuring to see this situation evolving. Hopefully, we'll see future studies with a larger number of participants to better qualify the encouraging results from this initial pilot study. If you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. The International Progressive MS Alliance has announced over 4.6 million euro in new funding to accelerate the development of new treatments for progressive MS. The Challenges in Progressive MS Awards will advance funding for 6 promising research initiatives that received exploratory grants from the Alliance in 2021. These projects are focused on improving the understanding of the mechanisms that drive progression in MS, and they include research into the loss of nerve cells in progressive MS, molecular pathways that promote neuroprotection and repair, and the testing of drugs designed to slow progression. Additionally, the Progressive MS Alliance is also funding 9 projects as part of its Innovation and Well-Being Awards. This first-of-its-kind research pipeline was announced last year, and the 9 projects being funded address the symptoms of pain, mobility, impaired cognition, and fatigue. The first phase of these research projects will begin early this year, and results will be reported in mid-2025. The International Progressive MS Alliance is continuing to deliver on its promise of moving progressive MS to the top of the MS research agenda, and will continue to keep you updated on their expanding portfolio of research investments. If you'd like to learn more about the Alliance, please visit progressivemsalliance.org, and you'll find that link in today's show notes. Personally, I couldn't be happier to be starting the new year with so much encouraging news, from new ways to effectively treat MS-related fatigue, to reducing the stress that so many MS caregivers carry with them, to funding innovative progressive MS research. One more piece of encouraging news is that the National MS Society's MS Navigators can help you successfully navigate through the often confusing costs of generic, biosimilar, and other prescription MS medications. You'll meet one of those MS navigators in a moment when my guest, Robin LaRue, joins us. A few weeks ago, Dr. Jiwon Oh joined us to help explain the similarities and differences between brand-name disease-modifying therapies and the growing number of generic and biosimilar DMTs that are available today. Generics and biosimilars should represent more affordable alternatives to their brand-name counterparts, but whether they do or not is really dependent on the health insurance you happen to have. And if you're a regular listener, you've heard me say that I think the National MS Society's MS Navigator program is the gold standard when it comes to personalized one-on-one support and real problem solving for people affected by MS. So I am very happy to have Robin LaRue join us today. Robin is an MS navigator. She specializes in health insurance resources. And Robin's here to help us better understand the cost and insurance issues that are related to biosimilar and generic medications. Welcome to the podcast, Robin.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
I want to start with a very basic question. Why do we assume that biosimilars and generics will be cheaper for patients?
So I originally assumed generics would have low costs because I've been picking up really cheap generic medications for years. A more official answer is that the brand name manufacturers already did the expensive work of perfecting a formula, doing clinical trials to demonstrate safety and effectiveness. I sort of think about it like a family recipe. So Grandma did lots of trial and error. She used lots of different ingredients, made so many batches for taste tests to finally get your favorite dessert just right. This point, if you'd like to make it, you just need to pull up the recipe card and start baking. So it's a much more efficient process. One other driver for the lower costs is that the FDA often approves multiple generic options. So that creates competition. Competition tends to lead to lower prices.
When a brand name medication has a generic or biosimilar available, what kinds of cost-related challenges might someone find themselves facing?
Yeah, so generics and biosimilars for high-cost treatments often still have really high costs, which was a surprise. Here we are. So manufacturer financial support programs, especially for free drug, often end for both the brand name and generic forms. If cost help programs continue, a lot of planning on the part of the patient is needed to make sure that you've set up the right manufacturer's cost help for the version of the medication the pharmacy is going to give you that month. One other hiccup that we find around the cost is that insurance plans can and often do replace brand with generic forms on their covered drug lists, called formularies, even in the middle of a plan year. And pharmacies don't always buy their stock from the same manufacturer. So again, this comes back to if you're getting cost help, this can throw a little wrench in that.
Some states have passed laws limiting the use of copay savings programs for brand name medications once a generic version is available. What can someone living in one of these states do if they find themselves facing this kind of a situation?
Yeah, at this point, California and Massachusetts are the two states that have passed this type of law. The goal is to reduce overall healthcare costs. So that's great. But a side effect is that some residents no longer have access to cost help that they really counted on. So if you live in one of these states and if you're impacted, call the medication's manufacturer to have a conversation. Ask them if they're aware of any solutions that will let them keep their medications affordable.
For people without health insurance, pharmaceutical companies offer patient assistance programs. Can you explain what these programs are all about?
Yeah, patient assistance programs that offer free medication to people without insurance are a great resource. To connect to a patient assistance program, call the manufacturer. Again, make sure it's the program for your specific medication. It's gotten a little trickier with generics and biosimilars on the market. You can find a list of the programs with contact information on our website. So when you call, let them know you're uninsured. Ask if they offer a free drug program. If they do, ask how you can apply. We found that as generics, so again, competition, come onto the market, these free drug programs are becoming less available. I think it's also worth mentioning with these patient assistance programs that many of them not only offer free drug programs, but cost help programs for people who have insurance, but who still have high costs.
We find that different disease-modifying therapies can be covered by different insurance benefits. For instance, can you talk about the difference in how an injectable DMT might be covered compared with an infusible DMT?
Self-injectable medications, along with the oral medications, are filled at the pharmacy, and they're covered under the pharmacy benefits. Infusion treatments are covered under the medical benefit because people get those treatments in a medical setting. So you can look at your covered drug list. You're never going to find your infusion treatment on that. It's the medical benefit. Another change that is a little surprising to a lot of people when they start taking an infusion treatment is that there is not one bill, but two bills. One comes for the cost of the medication, and the second is for the administration infusion services, so that facility that gave you the medication. One thing to think about when you're researching whether an infusion is right for you is not only does your plan cover the medication, but what infusion centers are in network with your insurance plan.
Can a pharmacist switch a patient from their brand name disease-modifying therapy to its generic without first discussing it with the patient or their prescribing neurologist?
They can. The laws are different in different states. There are some notification requirements in some states. I am not an expert on all of those. But generally speaking, ideally people are notified, it'd be by insurance, that their plan is going to start covering generic instead of brand name. But the notifications, even if they're done, can be so subtle that I've spoken to people who didn't realize they had been notified until after they received their medication and noticed it was different. So not always ideal the way these things are done.
Insurance companies make decisions, and as we know, all those decisions aren't always in favor of the patient. When that happens, the patient has a right to an appeal. How does that process actually work? What does someone have to do?
Yeah, so if something, a service or a medication has been denied, insurance is going to give you documentation of that. You will get a letter. It might be in your online portal if you have opted in for electronic notification. So you want to find that document because that is what's going to list the time frame. Can you file an appeal? If so, when do you need to start? What are the instructions for starting? It's going to be different for every company. So step one, find out what your plan, what those rules are. Second step is reach out to your doctor. They want to know that the medication they recommended isn't being covered. Most doctor's offices are really great about handling appeals. We do have appeal template letters for each MS disease modifying therapy that can also be shared with healthcare providers. There's also a program called the Patient Advocate Foundation that offers really outstanding support with health insurance appeals.
As we're talking about appeals for a moment, I will make a plea to be persistent. I'll share something that happened to me very, very recently. I was denied a prescribed medication, and I got my letter of denial, and it listed out that I could go ahead and I could appeal online. I could appeal by writing a letter and sending it through the mail, or I could appeal by phone. Well, the thing about writing a letter is the denial letter did not include an address for me to send my appeal to. And the thing about appealing online is the webpage referenced in the denial letter actually did not exist. And the thing about appealing by phone is when I called, the person who eventually got around to speaking with me told me I could appeal online or by mail. When I pointed out to them that those options, as reasonable as they sounded, actually didn't exist, they put me on hold and then came back and said, okay, you can appeal by phone, which required me explaining my appeal, but having to stop every three or four words because they were writing this down so slowly that it seemed like they were chiseling it into stone tablets. That is my real world example of an appeal. So be persistent and just don't take no for an answer.
Stories like that, they bother me. Thanks for sharing that.
Trust me, they bother the patient too. Let me ask you, how can an MS Navigator help someone who's unhappy with their insurance company's decision regarding their disease-modifying therapy?
We are available to do a few things. You know, one is to help you decode what the situation is. Sometimes people, all they know is that they can't get their medication. So we can help sort of figure out what are the questions to ask to understand, was this actually denied? Is it, you know, is there an easy solution to this? Sometimes there is, and that is awesome. Often there isn't. So in which case we can provide information about the appeals process, help people understand next steps for moving through that. Sometimes I also will talk to people about alternatives. Can we work outside of your insurance, at least temporarily? So is there a drug discount program where you can get your medication at an affordable cost while you work out the insurance coverage? Is there a free drug program that can help tide you over while you figure things out? So really, we're available to brainstorm and try to get you your medication, even when it's rough seas out there.
Well, Robin LaRue, thank you for all you do every day to help improve the lives of people affected by MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been really fun.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/332. You'll find that link in today's show notes, so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or a text. And if you have a minute, I hope you'll visit the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store and download the free Real Talk MS app for your iOS or Android smartphone or tablet. It's the best way for us to stay connected. The app will automatically download the latest episode of Real Talk MS. You'll be able to access any of our past episodes. You'll be able to save your favorite episodes. And it's a great way for me to share bonus content with you. The app is free, so I hope you'll download it today. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.